We're ready to go, man. It's rock and roll.
But if you were to think about the notable pairs in throughout Chumash. Now, so Itamosh and Aaron might come up, but you know, what are other notable pairs that we might think of?
Shimon and Levi.
I feel like you cheated. I know. But, so we have Dasan and Aviram, you know, the classic guys who are up to no good. We blame them for all the bad things that go on, even though we only see their names come up in one context. Rashi tells us throughout it must have been them all along. And we have Nathan and Avihu, you know, the two of our own sons who are incinerated. And you know,
we have Leah,
Yaakov and Esau. There's a lot going on.
Good son and the other son.
Yeah. Right. So, all right, Cain and Hevel. There's a lot of good son, bad son dynamics. And maybe one day we'll talk about why the younger son seems to always win. That if you're Jewish, at least for sure Jewish in the days of Tanakh, you're better off being born second. It's a fascinating thing in and of itself. Trying to think of how many firstborns are the most successful in their families when it comes to Torah stories.
Is the same true for Rachel and Leah?
So Rachel and Leah, who's... Trooper told Leah...
Or only be for men, or...
So Rachel and Leah is a fascinating dynamic. We have to think about that more.
But Yosef is a firstborn.
Yosef is a firstborn, but not really a firstborn, really. He's like...
Not really.
I think that counts.
Maybe. The first person who, I think, we see take a significant major role, this is what I talked about this past Shabbos, but it's fascinating. First person who was really, really the firstborn is Shaul HaMelech. How does Shaul HaMelech do?
Not so well.
Mm-hmm. So that's a fascinating thing in of itself. We'll talk about that some other time. What we're talking about tonight is the dynamic duo of Shimon and Levi. And I think that their relationship actually spans more years and has a larger impact on the Torah narrative as a whole than most of our other relationships. We see Yaakov and Esav, and they have their thing, and Amalek and Bnei Yisrael. But I think Yaakov and Esav, at least within Am Yisrael, is a really fascinating narrative that I would like to explore this evening. And to start off, let's look at the end of the narrative. At the end of the narrative, we have graduation. Graduation, you know, it's a very, very exciting time, and you know, everyone's getting called up, and maybe there are tributes, and you know, we've got the valedictorian, we've got the person with the best midos, and Levi gets called up. And so if you were to open up a chumash and you look at all the brachos that Moshe Rabbeinu gives to all the tribes, is anyone a Bal Kore? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think of myself as much of Bal Kore Bal Kriya, but I can generally lane most of Zosa Bracha because we lane it so many times. So.
What do you do, Sukhastar?
So, for those who are familiar with that Kriya, Levi has a very long accolade. Yeah. You know, for Yehuda, it's one line. For Reuven, it's like one and a half. For Levi, look at it. He gets four. Levi in Tumeach Rakalish Chasidecha. Oh, Levi, you're the best. You get the Orim Tumim because you're so righteous. And you were challenged at the Meiriva, at the waters of strife, with referring to Moshe and Aaron. And it goes on and on and on. And Moshe just can't stop talking. It's almost getting awkward. Like, okay, why is he going on and on and on about Levi?
No, because he was a Levi.
Because he was a Levi. But
ancestor.
And
doesn't necessarily make him the best. Okay. Right?
Well, he seems to go on and on and on about him. But yes, okay, fair. Yeah. Fair enough, he's not necessarily the best. But it's a little bit uncomfortable, because when we think about this dynamic duo of Shimon and Levi, you know, Shimon and Levi are these best friends who do so many things together. Where did Shimon come up in Vizosa Bracha? Is he before Levi? Is he after Levi?
He's not there.
Shimon, the tribe of Shimon, does not get a bracha from Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of Moshe. It's totally left out. So where do we find Shimon? If you look at our second source, if you look at Yehuda, who notice he only has one line, even though Yehuda is the leader of Am Yisrael. Rizos Yehuda vayomar Shema Hashem kol Yehuda. God should hear the voice of Yehuda, the tefillos of Yehuda. Vialamo tevienu, and you know, he should restore him to his people. He should be the leader of Bnei Yisrael. Yadav rav lo v'izr mitzar rav tiyeh. You know, though his own hands strive for him, he should have help against his foes. And Sforno says, what are we talking about? What's going on here? You got to really be paying attention. What do we mean by Vizos Lehuda, that this should go for Yehuda? That we're praying for Yehuda, but we're also actually praying for Shimon. what's the vizos here? And this is for you, Huda, that we're praying for Shimon as well, that additional vizos, because Shimon, as you'll see in this little graphic on the bottom right, the Naka, the tribal inheritance of Shimon is actually within the area of Yehuda. Shimon didn't have his own land.
Right.
Or their own land. It was a tribe at this point. Shimon really is not doing so well toward the end of the Am Yisrael narrative. You know, Yisachar's got his own area. Naphtali, Menashe's got two different spots. I cut off part of it. Everyone's got their spot, except Shimon is swallowed up within Yehuda. Shimon's not allowed to seemingly interact with anyone other than Yehuda. Shimon's all alone. How did we get here? Why, when we know that Shimon and Levi are these two brothers that seem to be so close, why is Levi being lauded? Why is Levi the star child? And Shimon, seemingly fallen from grace, Shimon is really not so popular. Shimon doesn't even get a bracha. Now, what's the first scene we find with Shimon and Levi? This is a trick question because it's not in your source packet. But it's not such a trick question because if you know what Parsha it is, then that can help.
This week's Parsha.
What's this week's Parsha?
The story with Dina.
Parsha's Vayishlach. Dina goes out, and Dina is kidnapped by Shechem. He rapes her, makes her his princess. Fascinating story with Medrash about what goes on with Dina and how she actually eventually wanted to stay with Shechem. But we're relatively familiar with the story that the brothers make a pact with Shechem. You guys are all going to be circumcised because Chalila, should our sister be married to someone who's not Jewish? It was the first time someone said Chalila to marry someone who's not Jewish. and they must have really liked Dina because everyone says, yeah, okay, let's do it. And so on
not
day,
just him.
Right, the whole city. Day three, which is day of the most pain, Shimon and Levi come into the city and wipe everybody out. Yeah. It's a big scene. They kill everybody. And so that's the first time that we see this brotherhood going on. You see these boys, the boys coming together.
Yeah.
And there's a whole confrontation with Yaakov, and Yaakov's like, what are you doing? You just killed the whole city. And they're like, what do you expect? They're big brothers. They're good big brothers. And big brothers should take note. If you mess with our sister, you're going to get it. And so they said they messed with our sister, so we had to show them. We had to take back nobody messes
right.
with our sister.
That's right.
And then Yaakov doesn't say anything. There's no response. It's almost like they got the last word in and Yaakov is speechless.
Or agrees with them.
Or maybe he agrees with them.
Well,
so
he criticizes them later.
Oh, but when does he criticize them?
When he gives the brachos.
Yeah.
When it's time for his brachos. We're going to jump to source 4. Yaakov does this funny thing because in Parshas Vayechi, Yaakov's blessing all his children. However, Yaakov's blessings for his children are not like you should have health and wealth, children, and you should pass your tests. His brachos are a little bit more
parental.
You could say parental. There are two kinds of grandmothers. There's the grandmother who where the kid would be like, oh, it was amazing, and the kid will like go to his bar mitzvah and. It's just abysmal. Like, it's so bad. The kid's off key. No one can sing with him. He's slipping over his words. Everyone's uncomfortable for the full time that the kid is leading davening. And he comes down, and his grandmother's like, oh, that was incredible. Oh, my God. You should daven on Yom Kippur. This was so inspiring. And like, Bubby just can't get enough. And that might be one side of the family. The other Bubby, though, might not. It should be like,
I'm done.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's gonna tell it
the
way it is.
Not my
grandson. Embarrassed the family.
Yeah. It's from their side. You know, she's got a lot of things to say. Some bubbies just love the children unconditionally. All bubbies love children unconditionally.
No.
Some of them just see all the positive and no negative. And sometimes bubbies.
Bubbies, not Z.
No, my mother. She tells it like it is.
Sometimes bubbies or mommies or daddies will tell you like it is. So who loves the grandchildren more? The one who takes in the kid even though he's momish, the worst bal tefillah we've ever seen? Or the one who says, maybe you should never ever do that ever again? Or the one who gives him a little bit of tough love? Who loves the kid more?
They both do.
They both do. Who's a better parent? Still unclear. But Yaakov definitely takes the hard line approach. Yaakov is not going to coddle his children. Maybe because he's like, we're building a nation here. And so it's not about you feeling good or me feeling good. It's about us being able to develop Am Yisrael. In order to develop Am Yisrael, we're going to point out all of your strengths. And some of the brothers get nice compliments, and these are your strengths. Some of them focus on their flaws. And some of them, there's a mixture of the two. And so Reuven gets his critique. Sure. You know, you're pachas kamayim, you're a little bit...
His due.
You were a little bit too quick. And if you maybe spent a little bit of time thinking that you shouldn't interfere with your father's bed, then you wouldn't have made such a big mistake. You wouldn't have lost the kahuna. You wouldn't have lost being the leader of Am Yisrael. Reuven, you're not doing so well. So now everyone's a little bit concerned. Dad's on a roll. Dad is going to rip everyone. And then he gets to Shimon and Levi. Shimon and Levi are so connected. They're so connected that they don't get separate brachos. They get one bracha. They're almost the same person at the end of Yaakov's life. They seem to be so in line because, source 4, we're going to look at the whole thing inside. Shimon v'Levi achim. You two are brothers. Klei chamas machroseim. You use weapons. You guys are warriors. Bestom al tevonavshi, bekal al tekar kvodi, and you don't want to get involved in their plans. You don't want to be involved in their schemes. Ki ba pamharku ishu vertsonam ikrushur. Because when they get upset, they literally kill people. They went on a killing spree. Arura pam ki az. Cursed be their anger. That was so fierce and so strong. They have artem ki kashata, and their wrath was so ruthless. And then he says, and now, first he's just pointed out their flaws. Now he's telling them, he's giving them life advice for the rest of humankind, of rest of Am Yisrael. Achal kein biyakov v'afitzim Yisrael. You should separate, divide them amongst Jacob, scatter them amongst Bnei Yisrael. And if you look at our map on the first page.
Yeah, there's no.
Oh, well, where is Levi? Is Levi? Levi doesn't actually have any encampment. Levi, they were the holy ones, and so they crashed with all their brothers and sisters. But the tribe of Levi is nowhere to be found. But where is Shimon? Shimon's all the way in the south. Look at how much space. It's a little bit difficult because of the shading. But look at how much. If anyone wants to sponsor color printing for Kolo, and more importantly, color ink, I'm always trying to get us to print in color. One of my life goals is to get the YU Kolo to print in color. Because I could do so much more in color. It would be so beautiful.
I bet they'll break one of these days.
One day. We're trying.
If the printers aren't expensive.
Somebody has to make specific donation.
Yeah, we need a good...
Dedicated donation.
We need a good ink guy. If anyone knows someone who works in the ink company, then let me know, and I'll see what I can do. We'll figure that out. But anyway, where we're holding, on the bottom of page 1, which says page 2, Shimon's all the way at the bottom. Shimon's far away from everyone else. Look at how much space there is between Shimon and Binyamin. Only Yehuda's there. And why is Yehuda there? Because Yehuda's is the grown-up in the group. Yehuda's the adult. He can handle the potential negative influences of Shimon. And everyone else is far away. We want to keep Shimon far, far away. Yaakov says, we're going to keep Shimon far away.
He's stuck next to Gaza. You
That's
know,
different than dispersing.
So we want them to be dispersed. Don't want them to be next to one another. And so Levi is literally dispersed. Sleep staying in many, many different places. I think there were 42 different cities which Levium slept. Mm-hmm. The Ari Miklat, and then they're like sub Ari Miklat. And so they're all spread out, and Shimon is all the way at the south, all the way at the bottom. And so why? Why they split up? Well, we know why they split up, because they're dangerous.
Yeah, they could start killing people if they get upset, right? So this is they split up the team so they don't do that.
So let's jump to the top, because the first time we actually see this happening is actually before Yaakov tells them to split up. Yosef, and we say, El told us Yaakov, Yosef. That's the beginning of... That's in... The next exparsha, not this exparsha, that Yaakov and Yosef were very intricately related, and a lot of the things that Yosef does seem to be an actualization of what Yaakov wanted to accomplish all along. And so Yosef, when he's hiding as the viceroy in Egypt, And the Bnei Yaakov come down, all of his 10 brothers, excluding Binyamin. They come down, and he accuses them, you guys are spies. And they're like, no, we're not spies. We're all the son of one man. And he says, prove it to me. They said, okay, we'll go get our brother. Fine, totally fair. Well, go get one of your brothers, but I'm going to keep one of you here. Why am I keeping one of you here? Because...
Collateral.
Well, collateral, but also, just on a practical sense, they could bring back whoever they want. They could bring back Joe Schmo. They could bring up Plone Amoni. They could bring back
anyone. He's my brother,
anyone.
Right?
Yeah, there's our brother. And, you know, you could go... It's a long trip from Egypt to Israel and back. So they could find anybody and just make sure that he knows all the things. This is a bad example, but when I've met people who have fake identifications, presumably because they wanted to vote, and they're a fake person. They have a fake name. They have a fake address, fake birthday, sometimes a fake height and weight. And so it's fun to test them. You know, where'd you grow up? Do you always live there? And so that's a lot of the questions about this fake identity that they have. Obviously, the Shema, because they want to vote, and not because they want to partake in the pre-Shear festivities. And so they could convince them. They could find somebody. It's not out of the question to find someone and tell them all the details you need to know. All the funny stories about mom and dad. They could do that. But instead he says, I'm going to hold on to Shimon. And then if Shimon recognizes this other guy, then okay, great. Obviously this is your brother, but if not, then I'll know that you guys are lying to me. But why is Yosef really separating Shimon and Levi?
Doesn't want to get killed.
He doesn't want to get killed. So Rashi says, he's worried because Shimon and Levi are a force. And particularly when they're upset, when they're motivated, when their family is being threatened by an outsider, they have a history of going on a literal killing spree. So Yosef's like, I'm going to separate them. Why Shimon over Levi? Because Rashi says in the beginning, it was Shimon's idea to throw him in the pit in the beginning, to kill him in the beginning. Eventually he got into the pit, fine. Whole story I won't ruin. Consider it.
Spoiler alert.
And so we're seeing that they were very much together, they were very much one unit, that they're even getting a bracha or a klala together, but they need to be separated. And Yosef is trying to make that happen. And something happens when they're separated. Something happens when Yosef separates Shimon and Levi. Because Shimon's sitting in his cell, and the Midrashim say that once all the brothers left, he took him out of the cell, and he wasn't like in isolation for however many months or even years. He was being taken care of. He was okay. But Levi, now for the first time in his life, doesn't have his
sidekick.
His sidekick. Is it a sidekick? Sidekick is a lush of seven. Yeah. His pair.
His bud.
His
other half.
Huh?
Other half.
His other half, yeah. I imagine that, you know, there were 12 Shvatim, and everyone had their own bed, but Shimon and Levi had bunk beds. That's just... they were really, really tight. So now Levi is sleeping probably on the top half of the bunk, because he's a Levi. Mm-hmm. And he's on the top half of the bunk, and there's no one underneath. It's a little bit sad. So they're on the way back, and now they've got all the grain that they bought from Yosef. That's why they went down to Egypt in the first place. I'm skipping a lot of these stories because I think we know them. And the pasuk says, "Vayiftach ha'echad," source 5, that the one opened up his sack. And oh my gosh, there's money in the sack. That's not good. We were supposed to pay the Egyptians. Looks like we didn't pay them. We're probably in trouble. But Rashi says, "Who's ha'echad? Who's the one?" You know, there are 12. There are 10 options or 9 options at this point. How do we know which one it is? That must be Levi. Why? Because he's Nisha Yachid Mishimon Ben Zugo. He's without his companion. This, for the first time, Levi becomes Echad. And this moment in Levi's life changes everything. This moment alters Levi's trajectory and his children's trajectory. I don't want to cast dispersions on Yosef, but the fact that Shimon is forced into a cell and completely alone might actually explain why Shimon doesn't succeed in the long run, as opposed to Levi. Because Levi is with all of his brothers, and yet he's still ha'echad. He's still the one. He's still the one who's alone. Whereas for Shimon, has no capacity to be with other people. Shimon's by himself in a cell, getting a funny look. Because their paths start to differ. Because eventually, the brothers come back to Yaakov, they convince him to come down, and Yosef has the brothers and the Bnei Yaakov settle in Egypt. And he gives them a funny instruction. that you or I probably wouldn't have recommended. Instructions as follows. He says, you guys are going to go have a meeting with Paro. And Paro's going to say, Jews, what do you guys do for a living? And so before Jews were bankers, before Jews were doctors, lawyers, and accountants, what did Jews used to do?
Herd.
They were shepherds. And so Yosef says, I want you guys to tell Paro you're shepherds. Now, whether they noticed it or not, that was not the best social move. Not the best PR. Bnei Yaakov were not going to be so popular if they're shepherds. Why? Because
Those are their deity.
Sheep are gods. So someone who herds around gods is not going to be the most popular person around. Fair enough? And so the Jewish people become pariahs to some extent once they arrive in Egypt. They're also in their own area. They're in Goshen, although that doesn't stay that way. That's why on Pesach, God had to jump over the houses, pass over houses. If everyone lives in one place and there are only Jews in Goshen, that's seemingly not... It's not necessary to jump houses. Everyone...
Is right there.
Go attack the other parts of town. So seemingly at some point, either the Jews move or the Egyptians move. Maybe the real estate was cheap at that time, and then the city grew and grew and grew over 200 years, and now everyone wants to live where the Jews live also. Brooklyn became a very cool place to live, which wasn't always the case. Sorry, New Yorker.
What world do you live in?
I stayed in Brooklyn once for a family bar mitzvah. We walked around, and I'm like, there are a lot of cool people going on here. What's going on? Like, I thought, like, just, you know, Hasidim live here. And they're like, nah, Brooklyn, Brooklyn's all over. But if you walk around in Brooklyn, then you could play the Jimmy Kimmel game. Jimmy Kimmel, I forgot what channel he's on, but ABC, his show, he's got a game he plays, Hipster or Chassid. And so you see the guys walking.
Hipster or, he plays that?
Yeah, Hipster or Chassid, not Chassid. Hipster or Hussein.
Oh my gosh. So the whole of America has been introduced to this.
Yo, big time. Definitely. Yeah. And so he'll like take a picture of someone or he'll interview somebody and like, you'll see, and the guy's got like a nice Ganza beard. I'm like, you don't know. Like, yeah. Hipster cousin?
Wow, I want to see that.
Need a resident cousin, hipster.
Rabbi Zucker, does he do that bit every night?
No, not every night. I've seen it numerous times though.
Wow. I'll have to look it up on YouTube.
I would highly recommend learning Chumash. If you're not going to learn Chumash, though, then this is not
Jimmy Kimmel's pretty good.
This is not a terrible way to spend your time.
He's not
fun.
Jewish, right?
No, but he looks very Jewish with his short beard.
But make sure you use the kosher internet when you look at
him. He's a New York guy.
Yeah. And so the Jewish people in that first generation are separate from the Egyptians. Yosef tells them, you guys are going to move to Egypt, and I don't want you to be Egyptian. I want you to be Jewish. Yeah, you have to live here because there's no food anywhere else, and it's important for your protection and for the long-term security of the Bnei Yaakov to be living in Egypt. But we don't want the Jewish people to become Egyptians. Assimilation was a significant concern. What's the best way to prevent assimilation? Make them hate you. Make the Egyptians dislike the Jewish people by making their profession something that is the most disturbing thing the Egyptians could possibly imagine. So is it uncomfortable? Yeah. Is it effective? Oh, yeah. And so for that first generation, when the Bnei Yaakov, when Yaakov and his children are living there, the Jewish people live in Goshen, the Egyptians live everywhere else, and there's seemingly no overlap. And then Yaakov dies, and then Yosef dies, and then all the brothers die out. The last one of the brothers to die out is Levi. And Levi... remember, is Ha'echad. He's the one who's been alone. He knows what it's like to be alone. And he tells his children, my father told us, that we need to be careful about mixing too much. That we need to be comfortable being alone, being solitary. And even if other people don't like us, even if other people don't agree with us, we need to be okay with that. And that's very relevant right now in Goshen, in Egypt, in Mitzrayim. And so his children remember that longer than everyone else, because Levi lives, I think, even like 10 years longer than the rest of his brothers. And then one day, something happens. Gemara in Sota tells us that one day the Egyptians are like, we got a problem. Actually, no, before the Gemara in Sota, the Medrash tells us, and I heard this Medrash, I didn't believe it, and I finally found it. It took me longer than it should have, but I finally found it. Thank God. Yaakov Shimoni. Thank God for Safaria, which just lets you... like type in certain words and whatever. that, because what happened? The Jews, they grew and they grew and they grew. The beginning of Sefer Shemot talks about how the Jewish people would have six children at a time. Well, the Medrash says that Jewish women would have six children at a time. There were a lot of Jews in Egypt. And it wasn't just that there were many Jews. It's not that Goshen was filling up and the schools were at capacity, had to build new schools. It's that they were filling up Egypt. They were going out into other fields. They were going into the Egyptian markets. They were entering into Egyptian society to the extent that the Medrash tells us, and that's in source A's, that you couldn't get a seat in the concert halls, in the theaters, because the Jews had all the seats. Now, if you go to a modern-day sporting event and you look around, there's a lot of Jews there. There are times when I'm like waiting. One day, I think this might happen. During the seventh inning stretch at Wrigley, the guy's going to get over the loudspeaker and say, you know, welcome to Wrigley Field, the seventh inning stretch. We've got a really exciting show for you. Before the show starts, I just want to let everyone know that the Mincha Minyan at the kosher stand in section 143 is starting in about 5 minutes. And just remember our policy, even if you're an Ovel, it's first come, first serve for leading Minyan. There are so many Jews. Those Minyanim can sometimes be wild, and like I feel bad. We're like taking up the whole...
I had no idea there was going on.
There's a lot. Well, they don't make announcements yet. But yeah, there's the likelihood of you getting a Mincha Minyan or a Ma'ariv Minyan at Wrigley Field is very high.
The New York Marathon has three Minyanim before the start of the Minyan.
Is it all done over at fall? Like people tell
is you. Is that minion?
People know is to meet at the kosher stand.
There's a late minion. There's three minyanim at the start of the marathon.
If you want to bring Jews together, what do you have to do?
Eat
food.
That's right. You're doing a 135?
I don't go to Wrigley often enough, and so I'm not entirely holding all the details. But I know a lot about Giant Stadium in New York because we used to go all the time. And I've done many minyanim there. Sometimes, like, it's conveniently timed. You know, it's like right before the fourth quarter, we're not doing well. So you go, you dive in Marif, and then we come back, and all of a sudden we do better. Oh, gosh. Sometimes it
works. Sometimes it works out.
Sometimes it works out. But it happens in Egypt where not just at the Sima Shas are the stadiums filled with Jews, but everywhere the stadiums are filled with Jews. And the Egyptians don't really appreciate that. You know, you're trying to buy a ticket to the game, it's sold out. How could it be sold out? Who's buying tickets to this? Oh, well, you know, the Goldbergs, you know, they got 41 tickets for all their children. You know, are they having success at the time? Yeah, they left one at home, okay. And the Jews are like getting a little bit annoying because they're everywhere and the Egyptians don't appreciate it. And so they come up with a plan because you can't enslave people. That's bad PR. What can you do? You can trick them. The power comes up with the ingenious plan. The Gemara in Sot actually tells us that Bilam advised that he use this plan. But one day, power makes an announcement, maybe it's the State of the Union, and he says, ladies and gentlemen of Mitzrayim, of Egypt, we have a project we're going to start. And it's going to be a communal project. We're all going to pitch in. We're all going to try and build storehouses for all the gold and silver that we've amassed due to the great wealth that our dear Yosef, the original Jew, brought down to Egypt, and we would invite all of our citizens to join us in this effort. So what do the Jews do? They want to be good citizens. They want to participate. So they all flock out and they all volunteer. And they don't just volunteer, but Parah's there. Parah's there, and the Gemara and Sota tells us, I assume Alav Sarim, you assume that they set over the Jewish people taskmasters. This is interesting. Alehem Mibayle. It's not Vayasimu Alav Sarim, you assume, that's singular. Should be Vayasimu Alehem Sarim Yisim. Source 7, sorry. Tana Devei Rabbi Elazar Bar Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Elazar Bar Rabbi Shimon tells us, Melamed, Shehiviu Melamed V'talu Lo L'Paro B'Tzavaro. Paro comes out, and he's wearing all the things he's supposed to be wearing. He puts on a brick around his neck. Paro's ready to work. He's wearing his overalls. He's ready for this. I remember distinctly that I think it was right before Barack Obama got elected. This was a long time ago now. That he was volunteering on, it was the day before, like Martin Luther King Day. The holiday that was right before, it must have been Martin Luther King Day. It was right before Election Day. And he was literally wearing overalls and like shoveling things. I just remember being like, wow, that guy's running for president. He's volunteering. That's impressive. And so the president of the United of Egypt, Paro, is out volunteering. He's working. So if Paro's working, everyone's got to be working. And so Mikol Echad Echad Am Yisrael Shamar Lahem Istisani. Every Jew who's like, I can't do that. I'm Jewish. I can't do hard labor. Like, that's not how we work. although at the time I think the Jews were actually pretty impressive workers, but they said, I'm an Istinus, I'm highly sensitive. An Istinus in halacha is a special category, although most of us are Istinisim today, that someone who's very sensitive, so someone who needs to shower on a very frequent basis. Can you imagine someone who has to shower every day? Crazy, right? That's the example the Gemara gives. I think it's actually someone who needs to shower less frequently. No, I think it's even less frequently than once a day. But someone who has showers often, someone needs their hands cleaned. In our terminology, it would be someone who might have OCD, although in the Gemara terminology, it's kind of everyone who lived.
Cleanliness is next to godliness.
There's a whole story with Hillel. Hillel Hazaken, where he's saying, I'm going to go do a mitzvah, what are you about to do? I'm going to go take a shower. I'll take a bath. They say, that's a mitzvah? He says, yeah, of course, you have to take care of your body. It's a mitzvah to bathe. I don't think we have to remind anyone, but you can tell other people. And anyway,
I can't believe we should tell that to you.
And so the guy says, I'm an Istinus, I can't volunteer. And Amrlo, klum Istinus ata yosem in paro? You are more an Istinus, you're more sensitive
than paro?
Than our king, than our deity? It can't be. And so everyone was peer pressured. Everyone felt like they needed to be volunteering as well. And so all the Jewish people flock out to volunteer. And what happens?
Paro disappears.
One day, Paro doesn't show up. And then some of the other Egyptians don't show up. And the Jews are a little confused, but they just keep going. They're good citizens. And then it's a little bit uncomfortable. Some of the Egyptians, instead of coming with shovels, they come with clipboards. And how are you guys doing? You finished your quota for today? Yeah, that's great. I'm like, I didn't realize that we were doing quotas. Yeah, there, of course there are quotas. We always had quotas. We were talking about it. Now there are. And gradually, the Jewish people went from volunteers to slaves. And thus starting our years of servitude. Except for one group of Jews. Which Jews were not slaves? B'nai Levi. We know this. Why weren't they? Because when the announcement came for every good Egyptian is going to come out and volunteer, B'nai Levi said, never. Our grandfather told us don't get involved. Right. That we got to stand apart. We have to be separate. And all the other Jews are like, yeah, you can't do that. You're going to make us look bad. And a whole group of people not volunteering, that's not good. And they say, yeah, it's uncomfortable and it's not always easy, but our ancestor told us, don't get involved. Don't be part of this society. Stay separate. So we're going to stay separate.
They wore black hats and coats, too.
Who knows? Maybe. I don't know how they dressed. But, actually, based on the Medrash, it seems like all the Jews wore something. All the Jews kept their same garb. I don't know what that garb was, but it seems like everyone did. Which is part of the motivation for people today who don't toward American society. There are reasons why people do. Case in point. But the B'nai Levi don't get involved. They don't volunteer. If you ever pay attention, and I happen to think The Prince of Egypt is a wonderful movie on many levels, they get this piece wrong because they show Aaron working, and he didn't work. Because they're always walking around. They're walking around Egypt. They're going in. They're going out. How do you let slaves walk around all the time? Because B'nai Levi could do whatever they wanted. They were not part of this. And actually, there are Rashi's within the Yosef story as he's vice for it. He sets up various rules and laws and statutes for clergy to help them out and make life better for them. And ultimately, Levi cashes in on those things. They get like parsonage and who knows what else. And so check out those Rashi's when Yosef is running the show. And so something... And so it's uncomfortable. It's not easy for... Hold on, let me make sure.
Who picked... Did the Levium pick Shabbos as their day off from doing stuff?
Well, so we say in...
It wasn't Paro.
We say on Shabbos morning, that Moshe rejoiced in the gift of his portion. Oh, okay. Well, we're going to expedite now. I don't know what time it is. My apologies. I make too many jokes. It seemingly was Moshe, and not Moshe when he was Moshe Rabbeinu. Seemingly, it was Moshe when he was the chief of staff for Paro. He copped. That's when it seems like it happened, but we'll have to explore another time. So, Rav Shimon Schwab. Has anyone heard of Rav Shimon Schwab?
Mm-hmm.
Rav Schwab on prayer now is very popular. He also has a wonderful Parsha Sefer called Mayan Beis HaShoeva, which is only available in Hebrew, but mamish beautiful Torahs. I love it. And he was a rabbi in Germany. Before he spent his time in Germany, before moving to New York and being the rabbi in Washington Heights, and he spent a Shabbos with the Chofetz Chaim. That one Shabbos, just 25 hours, maybe a little bit more, changed his life forever, and he forever talked about it. It almost changed who he was. That interaction, those interactions with the Chofetz Chaim. So there's one story the Chofetz Chaim asked him. This Shabbos he spent with him, Chofetz Chaim was getting old, and people were like a little bit, you know, what's going on here? Is he really okay? And the Chofetz Chaim says, are you coming? And he says, no, I'm not coming. He says, are you leaving? No, not leaving. He says, why not? He says, what do you mean, why not? Because I'm not. He says, well, was your father coming? No. Was your grandfather going? No. And now it sounds like the Chofetz Chaim is building up to a joke. And the Chofetz Chaim, and we're not going to really look at it inside, although this is a great piece. This is actually not from, Rav Schwab wrote this up in his Sefer, in Mayan Beis HaShoeva. This is actually from the Chofetz Chaim, and the Chofetz Chaim version is way more intense than the Rav Schwab version, which is just like an interesting, I feel like a scholar. It's like comparing different stories.
The prism that people are looking at things through.
Interesting stuff. And he says, do you know why? He says, I'm a Kohen. The Chofetz Chaim was a Kohen. I'm a Kohen. You know why I'm a Kohen and you're not a Kohen? It's not because your father and because my father. It's because my great-great-great-great-grandfather, my ancestor, at Har Sinai, at the Chet HaEgel, and saw what was going on and yelled, Mi la Hashem Eli. He heeded the call. B'nai Levi heeded the call. B'nai Levi was willing to say, there are bad things going on right now, and Moshe is asking me to stand apart from my brothers, apart from my sisters, and do the right thing, even though it wasn't the easy thing, even though it wasn't the common thing. And so B'nai Levi gathered around Moshe, and even though the original plan was not that the tribe of Levi was going to be the Kohanim and the Levium, but that the Bechorim, the firstborns, were going to be, they became our leaders. They became the spiritual focal point of the Jewish people because they were the ones who, despite the challenges, despite the distractions, despite the uncomfortable feeling of being alone and singular, were willing to stay strong and stay apart. And the Amos Yaakov points out, or Yaakov Kamenetsky, that if you look at all the famous Levium throughout time, there are a lot, right? It'd be very hard to list all the famous Kohanim and Levium throughout Jewish history. How many children of Shimon can you list? Not a lot. One comes to mind. Zimri.
Oh, great. Yeah. Thanks.
This is part of the Magical Mystery Tour. Now we're on our last picture. Because Bilam and Balak try to mess with the Jewish people. It doesn't go so well, the whole cursing thing. For more information, see Parshas Balak. But ultimately, they actually do succeed at the very, very end. It's not Parshas Pinchas, it's part of Parshas Balak. They convince the Midianite women to seduce the Jewish people. And how do they do it? They do it with the sale. Jews are always suckers for sales. But eventually ended up to them doing terrible things with the beautiful Midianite daughters. And it got so bad that the tribe of Shimon was very involved in this big avera. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, you guys gotta stop. This is not good. And they said, no, we're Shimon. We stand together. We're not gonna break apart. We're the Achid. We're stronger when we're together. And so they go to their leader. They go and they say, Zimri, Moshe's trying to stop us. Moshe's trying to tell us that what we're doing is wrong. I don't think what we're doing is wrong. I think this is okay. And we got to stand together if we're going to stay strong against our enemy. And so Zimri, being a good Shimonite, jumps in and says, yeah, that's totally it. And so he grabs a Midianite woman, a princess, runs into a tent to do unspeakable things. And Pinchas, who's seeing that there's a literal plague going on and people are dying all around him, picks up a spear and kebabs them. Basically, and kills them, stops the plague, and you would think that Pinchas would be a hero. However, at the time, Pinchas is like 25. Is 38. He's young, very, very young. How old is Zimri at the time? Well, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that Zimri is none other than Shlumiel ben Tzuri Shaddai. Shlumiel ben Tzuri Shaddai, if you remember the all the Karbonos around Hanukkah time, we read he was the Nasi of Shimon. Shlumiel ben Tzuri Shaddai was about 250 years old. He was one of the Gedolei Hador. He was, think about the greatest sage you can imagine. That basically was Shlumiel ben Tzuri Shaddai. That was Zimri. And Zimri,
how can he go from that to that?
Grabs this woman because there's this mentality of we need to stand together. We need to stand. This is what the Gemara tells us. In Sanhedrin, you can look at it.
Yeah, but still, you've got Hador and he's doing, you know, Bon Azor.
So it's hard to imagine. It's hard to wrap our minds around it. But the impetus, the reason why he was doing it was because he needed to stand with his companions. And Pinchas, even though Nook, who killed the Gadol Hador, says, I don't care what people are going to say about me. I'm going to do the right thing. And he does. And what happens? Why does the Parshas Pinchas open? You really need to know a lot of chumash tonight. I don't think about it. But you need to know a lot of chumash for this. It starts with Pinchas gets a Birkas Shalom. He gets a blessing of Shalom. Now, why does he get a blessing of Shalom? One answer is that he just killed someone, and we don't want him to continue to kill people when they do the wrong thing.
But it's also about the, other people killing
Rashi
him.
Rashi points out that we don't want people to hurt Pinchas. Yeah. Why would they hurt Pinchas? Because he just killed the Gadol Hador. They just killed one of the guys who's going to be sitting on the field at the Sima Shas. So Zimri was one of the speakers lined up for the Sima Shas, and now he's not speaking because Pinchas just killed him. And so Pinchas needs some protection. But what's happening? Pinchas, as a descendant of Levi, says, I know this is what everyone's doing, and I know that it's uncomfortable to stand apart, but this isn't right. It's not okay. Mm. Now, what was Zimri's argument? Well, Moshe Rabbeinu married a Midianite woman. Her name was Tzipporah. So what's wrong with Zimri marrying a Midianite woman? That was the argument. Was it a good argument? Seemingly not so much. But that was the argument he made. And so, while Shimon is used to being together, used to being a pair, used to being all for one and one for all, if you will, Pinchas and a descendant of Levi says, no, we are echoed. We need to stand alone. We have a different kind of calling. And if we think about it, we'll tie back into Hanukkah now. What was the Greek plan? What were they trying to accomplish? So there are a few things, but in Mao Tzor, we say specifically, Yivanim nekputzu alai azai bishmei hashmai. I would think about singing it, but I'm not going to put you guys through that. I won't tell you what my grandmother said in my bar mitzvah.
Because she loved
it. Upartu komos migdalai v'timu kol hashmanim. And usually I change translations when they're ancient, but I like this one. The Grecians, or the Greekians, I don't know. But the Greeks were gathered.
Grecians.
Thank you. They gathered on the Hashmonaim, and what did they do? They broke down the walls of the towers, they broke into the base of Megdash, and defiled all the oils. V'timu kol Hashmonaim. Oh, no! They defiled all the oils. That's their big plan? Ha, 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 ha. Now the Jews can't light the menorah in purity? Who cares? What does it mean to be pure? What does it mean to be holy? Holiness, we say, atakadosh, atakadosh, kadosh, mechoyim, yichasela, and the Medrash Tanchuma, sorry, the Mechilta, says that Kedusha means to stand apart. It means to be separate. It means to say that there is something here that I'm not interested in. I'm not going to touch it. I'm not going to get to go there. It means that on Shabbos, Shabbos is Kadosh. It's separate from the week. We make Kiddush and sanctify the day. But what we're saying is that this day is different than other days. Ordinarily, we eat for sustenance. Ordinarily, we eat because we want to. Tonight, we're going to eat because it's a mitzvah. It's because we're sanctifying the world. We talk about Kadosh Baruch Hu as being Kadosh, as being holy, as being separate. A holy person is someone who's separate from the world. To be separate from the world does not always mean that you need to be entirely removed, that you need to dress differently and act differently, but it means that you're not entirely immersed. You're not fully immersed. When something bad is going on, you're able to say, this, something's fishy, this isn't right. And as Jews, we are Kedoshim. The celebration of Hanukkah is the ability for our ancestors and for us to be able to look at something from the standpoint of Levi as opposed to the standpoint of Shimon. Now remember, at Chet HaEgel, B'nai Levi had to kill their brothers and sisters. How could you possibly have to kill your brothers? How could a Levi have to kill his brother if none of B'nai Levi sinned? Because some of the female ladies married some of the Issachars and the Yehudas and the gods. They were intermarried. The B'nai Levi were immersed into the Jewish people. They weren't entirely separate. They weren't staying away from everyone else. But they kept a clarity of what they want to be focused on and what they don't want to be focused on. There's this cool thing about oil, as I'm sure you're familiar, that oil's always separate. You can mix oil and water, and eventually it'll separate on its own. It's not a coincidence that we Hanukkah, this substance that says, I'm going to be separate, I'm going to be holy, I'm going to be kadosh, that I'm not going to mix in. We believe in mixing in, though. We believe in being part of the world, in engaging with it. But even more so when you're engaged with the world. There are a lot of things, values that are discussed today that are not Torah values, not Jewish values. And there are people who are representing Torah values, who are not representing Torah values, and it's unclear, because you could have someone who's a terrible human being who might represent certain... There was a whole thing about Mike Pence. Mike Pence, our vice president. There are some things that he does, not from a political perspective, that I think Jews would not appreciate. That being said, he is more makbid on Yichud about being alone with a woman than most Jews are. Mm-hmm. And you'll have other people who might not be representing, who might seem like wonderful people, wholesome people, but they might not be promoting real Torah Jewish values. And the ability to be like oil, to be able to say, to fish out what's real, what do we want to take out, and what do we not, is so much more important, I think, especially for our community. If we still wore the same thing that we wore when we were in Egypt, and we never associated, we never went to theaters, we never went to ball games, it wouldn't be so hard. You just spend your entire day focused on what we call on kedusha, if you will, on things that are obviously and objectively
holy pursuits.
Yeah, obviously holy. When you get into the more fishy details, it's more complicated. But that therein lies the beauty. A lot of people have the minhag to put, and this might have just been a money saving minhag in Europe. I don't know. But they'll pour water into their menorah and then put oil and the wick. So maybe it was just because they wanted it to be higher up. I could definitely imagine that it wasn't like a beautiful minhag and it just happened. But
Why are they doing it?
Because, if the glass is this high, then to fill it with all oil, and oil is expensive, you don't have that much. If I fill it up most of the way with water and then a little bit of oil, then the oil will burn as I want it to, and the rest of it will just be full. But there's a... And so the water really is just there to lift up the rest of the oil. But there's a beauty there that maybe the water's also there because we want... Because one of the things we're celebrating is that we are... We are being mavdil, being kodesh l'chol, if you will. Yes, we are recognizing that some things are holy and some things really aren't holy. And it's not easy. And it's sometimes uncomfortable.
Meaning separating the water and the oil?
Yeah.
Here's a chol and kodesh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Preferably.
Kodesh.
But that's part of the celebration of Hanukkah, that we were able to find holiness even when everything was desecrated. Even when the Greeks said, we don't want to kill you. We just want to desecrate everything. We don't want there to be such thing as holiness anymore. We want to ideologically destroy the Jewish people, even though you guys will still be Jews. They were fine with people being called Jews. They just weren't okay with the concept of Kedusha. And so there's a halakha that Cole was learning about recently of Tumah Hodshah B'Tzibur, that if everyone is Tameh, then it's okay for us to do things that would ordinarily require purity, because if everyone's impure, there's nothing you can do about it. And it almost becomes like, all right, we're just going to roll with this impurity. Halakhically, the Chashmonaim could have lit impure oil, but they refused because they said, we're not going to conquer the Greeks by lighting impure oil. We need to make a statement that we are only interested in purity. We're only interested in that which is holy, not that which has been defiled, not that which the Greeks have touched and tried to destroy. What we celebrate in Hanukkah is the ability for the Jewish people, in particular when they're immersed in the world, when they have a holiday that this year directly coincides with another holiday, to be able to say, what's the difference between our holiday and their holiday? What values am I gaining? What is going on in the world that I look at as being something from the Torah, and are there things that are going on in the world that might not be as strongly from the Torah? And so that's the story of Shimon Levy. There's always more to discuss, but I think that's a survey. I really appreciate learning together. I'm happy to keep talking, but people aren't entitled to go to sleep.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.